You're listening to Soccer Report Extra with Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Soccer Report Extra podcast. I'm Bob McMahon. Producer Luke Crawford is at the controls. Flying solo again this week. Owen is in Ireland. Can't be with us today. But we're going to cover Champions League. But before we start that, a quick nod to the Premier League promotion playoff that was sort of almost like a pre-game game show, if you get what I mean. In as much as kind of double header, the game that's touted as being the most valuable in all of soccer, perhaps even the most valuable in all of sport, went first at Wembley, and it was two teams that not so long ago had been in the Premier League. Aston Villa against Fulham. Fulham, who finished third, I believe, in the Championship this year, were on a fantastic run and just faded slightly, pulled themselves right back into contention. Looked like they were heading for an automatic spot. Stumbled a little bit over the last little bit and got nipped by Cardiff, but they had the chance of redemption playing against Aston Villa. Steve Bruce, a bit of a specialist in getting teams promoted, and of course John Terry, who had suited up for Aston Villa this year. Anybody who watched the game would know that you knew there was a lot at stake in this one, because there was a bit of blood and thunder going on. There was very little quarter asked and very little given. Eventually it was Fulham who ran out 1-0 winners. Sessegnon, who everybody's raving about, and it seems only a matter of time before he finds his way to a big money transfer to a big club. Teams have been following him for some time. Fed Tom Kearney, the Fulham captain, put the ball away very, very nicely. Overall, it was a well-constructed goal, nice goal. And from then on, it looked like really it's a case of just the teams went at hammer and tongs. There was a red card, Fulham, 20 minutes to go. Dennis Odoi picked up a yellow card earlier on. The second yellow card was probably could have been a straight red. Very, very awkward and violent challenge on Jack Grealish, who had kind of been a thorn in the side of Fulham for the entire game. Looked like he was very much Aston Villa's best player. But even with 10 men, Fulham managed to find a way to get through at the end. Massive celebration. So Craven Cottage and Shadiq Khan, who bought the club, back in the Premier League, and whatever the money is, whether it's £120 million, £170 million, different people put different values on it. The bottom line is Fulham are back in the Premier League, and Aston Villa, with reduced parachute payments coming next year, have a lot of work to do to get themselves promoted back to the Premier League. So that was the early game, and then we're into the Champions League. So what I'd like to do today, seeing flying solo on this, when we get a game of this magnitude, I usually try and keep notes, as we go through the game, as I go through the game and watch the game, and use it for various things, write articles, and just used to, the habit I formed when I did Fox Soccer Report, I used to have pages and pages of notes after a weekend. But maybe just for this, it's not exactly a minute by minute, but it's just some general thoughts about the game and the high points and what maybe turned out to be the case or what maybe didn't turn out to be the case. So I'd like to kind of go through that and share these thoughts with you. So first of all, we talked last week about Gareth Bale being on the substitutes bench, and despite his goal-scoring form, there's a really strong case to be made for keeping Bale on the bench and starting with Isco. And that's actually what Zinedine Zidane did. And I think looking at the lineups, the one thing that really came through was the strength, or the relative strength, of the Real Madrid bench compared with Liverpool. Liverpool really didn't have that kind of depth, the game-changer depth that existed with Real Madrid. And as we know, and as we saw later on, how decisive that actually was. Early going, I think it was one of the key areas of the field that everybody was watching was the fullbacks, and particularly Marcelo up against Alexander-Arnold and Mo Salah. A lot of debate going into the game whether Marcelo would play his usual game and push forward, or whether he'd have to acknowledge the threat caused by Mo Salah and to make sure Salah didn't get in behind him. And early on, Marcelo was relatively played a very conservative game, But Alexander-Arnold, on the other hand, pushed forward, and you saw the same with Andy Robertson on the other side. So certainly early on, it was Liverpool that took the game to Real Madrid. It was they injected the pace in the game. They were having a little bit of trouble. I think whether this was nerves or whether this was part of the game plan, I felt that you didn't sort of see that that start we perhaps expected, that frenetic sort of pressing. They certainly did press, but it was much more orderly than we've sometimes seen Liverpool do this year. Thought early on, and sort of this is one you regret to write down, but there was one early on situation where a cross was played and Karius was quite decisive coming out to punch, and he was also quite decisive in clearing his lines as well, as was, interestingly enough, Navas in the Real Madrid goal. So it was quite clear that both teams were very aware of the threat that that both the opposition provided in terms of getting players in behind their defence. So you kind of had this situation with both keepers knowing and quite willing to play that kind of sweeper-keeper role. In the middle of the park, as Liverpool kind of took the initiative, I thought it was interesting with Modric and Kroos, how deep they played and how they really concentrated on and breaking up the Liverpool attacks as best they could and moving the ball as quickly as they possibly could when they did get possession. They played very tight, exceptionally tight triangle with Casemiro in that, particularly in that first half, and actually, as it turned out, to really be about the first 30 minutes until Mo Salah went off. But I didn't get a chance to look at the heat maps, but I made a little note to myself. It would have made some interesting reading in that first 20-25 minutes of how tight that that threesome played. It looked very much like one of the thoughts that went through my mind as Liverpool pushed was, you know, they're going to have to watch here. Real Madrid on the break, Isco is very capable of playing these kind of killer through balls, and you had Benzema and Ronaldo, who were really quite interesting, I thought, and particularly Benzema. Playing, you can't really call him a false nine, but he was drifting. He was drifting wide, he was drifting deep. He was helping out the midfield. Ronaldo, in some ways, I kind of sensed that he was doing some of the hard work that normally you'd expect of a striking partner in Ronaldo, but it looked very much like Ronaldo was not for the first time, allowed to concentrate on staying upfield and perhaps occupying the threat of Ronaldo occupying the Liverpool defence. Real Madrid had the first attempt with Marcelo. Kind of weak effort past the post, never really any threat. Referee up to that point really had a good game, and I think overall I would actually, you never get consensus on referees. But as I'll explain later with the Salah incident, I think there's a lot of reasons to give the referee the benefit of the doubt on that one. But the referee, I thought, was on top of the play. He was up with the play, and I thought he did a good job. Carvajal back from injury, only regaining fitness in the last week or so. Was guilty of some sloppy passing, one particular one that I have no idea what he's trying to do. This is just before the 20th minute. And he wasn't really getting forward, he wasn't attempting to get forward, but a sloppy pass conceded a corner. And I thought maybe Liverpool could have perhaps pressed him a little bit harder on that last side, on that left side. Sané was very eager, but The play seemed to be funneling more down the right than the left at that time, and I thought maybe if they'd switched it up earlier and got Sadio Mane to push after Carvajal, it might have been productive. You had Alexander Arnold coming forward, had a good shot just about the 22nd minute, good save by Navas, and realise that. And I think it's not news to anybody that Navas comes under a fair bit of criticism, but honestly, Honestly, I have to say that the times I've watched now, I can really remember him having a bad game. And really, I just wonder if he wasn't from Costa Rica, whether some of his critics would think more of him. But he continued going past that 20-minute mark into the kind of end of the first quarter, anywhere the half of the first half. Liverpool continued, they were pressing, but it wasn't frenetic. They weren't really upsetting the Real Madrid defence that much. And then came one of the kind of key moments of the game. I think you can really break it down into two very specific key moments. And the first one was obviously the challenge by Ramos on Mo Salah. And at the heart of that is Salah cutting across. Ramos and Salah, very tight. I saw it as perhaps Salah's arm going in there first, but as the challenge went in and the foul happened, it was clear that Ramos was not going to let that right arm of Salah's get away. Now, in the slow motion replay, you never know what's in the heart and what's in the mind of somebody when they commit a foul. But I think with Ramos's record, I don't think it's takes too much imagination to realise that he potentially, or to come to the conclusion, that he had Salah in a bit of a difficult position. And as he pulled his right arm down, Salah kind of body opened up and landed on that left shoulder, and that's what did the damage. The commentators I heard thought it was basically nothing, and it was Salah was going to get up and get on. Well, he got up, but he didn't last very long, and then he was down again and he was off. And that was one, you're losing your talisman player, guy that scored a ton of goals this year, and obviously a threat every time he touches the ball. But the second thing, the harm it did to Liverpool, more than psychologically, was Adam Lallana came into the game, and they put him on that left side. Mane came to the right-hand side, and you can understand why. And as much as it was as much about controlling Marcelo that it was about giving Lallana the ability to play on that left, which is a more natural position for him. But it was very important, I think, that they try to keep Marcelo under as much control as possible. And Sané, as the game went on, had a very good start to the game, and he continued to play really well throughout, I thought. But just that switch, they lost, they obviously lost Salah's effectiveness on that right side, Mane's effectiveness on the left, and Lallana never really came to grips with him. We'll talk a little bit later on the change that that was made later in the game. Once again, just for a couple of minutes after that injury, you could see how it was changing psychologically, and there were some really good sets of stats. Paul Carr, who used to work for ESPN, posted some stuff on Twitter that reflected the edge that Liverpool had before Salah had gone off, and then through the rest of the first half, and it was marked contrast. It was almost as much a psychological blow to Liverpool. It was a psychological lift to Real Madrid as well. That really was the beginning of Real Madrid's best spell, and apart from maybe a few minutes in the second half, it kind of continued that way. To some extent, Real Madrid, you can't say it was even up, but Carvajal looked like it was maybe an ankle or maybe some speculation, Achilles, about 35 minutes gone. He had to go off, as it turned out. I think they're talking about a hamstring now. But Nacho came on, and the benefit for Real Madrid was that was much more of a like for like. Carvajal, although when he got injured, he was moving forward into attack. He was quite far up the field. I don't think there was any expectation that he would be a rampaging right back on this night, and Nacho coming in really had made very little difference to Real Madrid. He sat in his defensive position, looked very comfortable, did a decent job, and really there was very little impact as far as Real Madrid was concerned. The first goal of the game came in the 42nd minute, but it didn't last very long, and it was a really excellent piece of officiating from the referee's assistant. The ball was played in, Ronaldo won the header, knocked it down, Benzema came in, knocked it in the net. Not very much Karius could do about it, but the replay showed it wasn't much in it, but Ronaldo was fractionally offside before he jumped for the header when the ball was played in, and then Benzema was slightly ahead as well. So as it turned out, went to half time, 0-0, and probably a decent time for us to take a break. We'll be back in a few seconds with part two and the second half of the 2018 Champions League final through my notes.
You're listening to Soccer Report Extra. Keep up to speed with the podcast and get all the latest news, musings, and rants from Bobby and Owen by liking us on Facebook at Soccer Report Extra. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to part two of this week's Soccer Report Extra podcast. Producer Luke Crawford at the controls. I'm Bobby McMahon, flying solo again this week. Owen's in Ireland and can't be with us today. So, to the second half. Didn't take long, and just like Carvajal had really sort of messed up a pass in the first half, and the chance that Liverpool turned into a corner, nothing came of it. But Alexander-Arnold, in not a dissimilar position, as Liverpool were beginning to come out from the back, hit an absolutely terrible pass and kind of caught Liverpool out of shape, and the ball was played in Isco. Karius came off his line quite quickly, and possibly that was the difference between Isco scoring and Isco hitting the crossbar, because it really was a bit of a sitter. He just had to keep it, he just really had to hit the target, I think, and it was going in. But it was the first real sign of real danger, and it was certainly the best chance of the game so far. Shortly after this, an incident that tells us something. And unfortunately, the broadcasters didn't pick up on it. And I was waiting for the replay, and I had to wait for post-game to look at it again. And then on Twitter, various video replays would show up with it. But it was the elbow, or the let's just say that Ramos did not take any steps to avoid Karius. It was, you could claim, I think, with some merit, that Virgil van Dijk had bumped Sergio Ramos in the penalty box. Whether it was enough for a penalty, I would very much doubt. In fact, I think it would have been an atrocious penalty if it had been given. But Ramos, once he'd got that bump and saw Karius in his line of sight, certainly in my opinion, didn't make any move to avoid him, and instead kind of got that arm up on Karius and thumped him. Do I think it had anything to do with what was to happen just a minute or so later? I don't, unless it kind of broke his concentration. I don't think it was a case of injuring Karius, although it very much could have. But as some of the people on Twitter have made out, you've got how many officials there, and nobody seemed really interested in taking Ramos to task on it. Then, of course, we get the opening goal of the game just seconds later. And it really is one of the most astounding situations or incidents I've ever seen in a Champions League final, or a European Cup final for that matter. And I go back quite a way. I can remember, I think I've seen every cup final, every Champions League final, European Cup final, since AC Milan beat Benfica 2-1 way back in 1963 at Wembley. But I've never seen anything quite like this. And as I thought about it later, of course, the irony, if irony is the right word, was it was Benzema that took advantage of Bayern Munich's keeper Ulrich's massive mistake in the semi-final when he went to, well, not quite sure what he went to do, but he completely misplayed it, let the ball run past him, and Benzema hit an open goal. Well, in this case, again, it was a bit of it was an open goal situation, but one of these situations where the ball's played through, obviously a goalkeeper's ball because he's coming out, gathers at the edge of the box. Benzema could easily have just put the brakes on and turned away, but, you know, almost by force of habit, he kind of followed the ball in, a couple of yards away from Karius, and then Karius, for absolutely no reason that I can possibly comprehend, when a player is that close to you. Now, it wasn't like Benzema, in his actions, was illegally trying to block the distribution. There was a good maybe yard and a half between Karius and Benzema. But the real fault of Karius was to underarm the ball. If he had just overarmed it, even the equivalent of taking a little throw-in, or the equivalent thereof, he could have had the same effect. But he decided to roll the ball out. And credit, massive credit to Benzema, who was obviously very, very sharp. You know, hasn't had a particularly good season, but he probably made up for it all in that this kind of 10-second spell. He had the wherewithal to stick out that leg. It bounces off the leg and it just rolls into the net. And there was just a stunned silence around the stadium before the cheers broke out, because I think, you know, anybody who's paying attention to it, their first reaction was there must be a foul in there. There must have been something illegal. It couldn't be as simple as that. But the thing was, it was as simple as that. It was just a complete and utter lack of concentration and lack of thought from Karius when he opted to underarm the ball, to bowl the ball out in effect. Something you only do, goalkeepers only do, in a situation where there is no forward around or no forward within any distance of being able to cut it out. So Liverpool found themselves without Salah, psychologically damaging, and then found themselves conceding an absolutely awful goal. And so, you know, it might be 1-0 on the board, but it was 2-0 in terms of the psychology of the game. Ramos was at it again just slightly after. Him and Mane had kind of raised his arm a little bit in the challenge and given him a little bit of a love tap. And down he went like he'd actually been rocked by a left hook. Not unusual for Ramos, of course. And, you know, speaking to the I think there's nobody listening to this podcast that doesn't know Ramos's reputation, but down he went. But a couple of minutes later, we had Liverpool back in the game. James Milner, the move really started, or the lead up to the goal, started with Liverpool gaining the corner kick. And Milner was involved in it twice. Once, it was Milner that played a very dangerous in-swinging cross in from the left-hand side. Real Madrid defender managed to get to it. And just as well, for Real Madrid, because Firmino was right behind him and would have had a very good opportunity. Went out for a throw-in, Milner goes across, Lovren goes up for the header. Who else is he challenging but Ramos? And what's Ramos doing as soon as he loses his header? He's holding his head, looking for something. But the ball's knocked down. Not kind of dissimilar, certainly the ball's coming from a different position, but not dissimilar to the situation that faced the officials in the disallowed goal just before half-time that Benzema put in from the Ronaldo header. Lovren knocked it down, but this time you could clearly see in the replay no threat of a flag coming from the referee's assistant, but Mane had got in behind the Real Madrid defence, and the sharpness and the speed over that first few yards of Mane, which makes him such an incredibly dangerous player, was there for all to see, and really putting it past Navas, who had absolutely no chance. So 10 minutes in the second half. First half had kind of almost like been the warm-up. You know, there wasn't a lot of real action in and around the penalty areas. It was almost like Liverpool were testing Real Madrid, and Real Madrid were quite comfortable absorbing it. The second half, within 10 minutes, it kind of exploded into action, and it was a completely different game and really set the tone for an incredible second half and some, you know, memories of the good, the bad, and the ugly that will stick with us for anybody who watched it. Will stick with us for many, many a year. Around about that time, you started noticing, and I don't know, I can't really say it, possibly could have happened at the start of the second half, but Lallana had started dropping back into that midfield, so it looked like more like a midfield four than a 4-3-3, and it was a case of Firmino and Mane really playing two up front, with both of them quite mobile. Thought it was a wee bit disappointing in Firmino's game. I've been a big fan of him this year in particular. I think he's been absolutely terrific. Some of you might remember from the awards show, he was my player of the year in England. But he was kind of well shackled in this game, and he never really seemed to break free of these of the Real Madrid shackles. But Mane continued to work hard, and eventually I thought of him as the man of the match. For Liverpool anyway, and if it wasn't for Gareth Bale, he probably would have been regarded as the man of the match as opposed to just for Liverpool. You could see kind of for that few minutes after the Mane goal, Sadio Mane goal, that Liverpool were visibly lifted, and they had a really nice little 3 or 4 minute spell when they started exerting some pressure again. And they really looked like they were kind of threatening a little bit to overrun that Real Madrid midfield. But as it turned out, it went the other way. And the 60th minute, round about the 60th minute, we saw one, in my opinion anyway, the most spectacular goal, greatest goal, I don't know, it depends how you define it. Certainly one that's in with one of the top five goals I've ever seen all time, in my opinion. When you consider the occasion, when you consider the difficulty, the technique, just the sheer audaciousness of the attempt, it ticks all these boxes. It was truly a memorable goal, and it was Gareth Bale's overhead kick. He came on in the 60th minute, and within a good half an hour, which I thought was, wouldn't say necessarily brave as Zidane, but he certainly wasn't going to let a situation arise where he perhaps wasn't given Bale enough time to be effective. But that second big turning point of the game, 60th minute, Bale came in, because 3 minutes later he scored that goal, the goal. Obviously, the fact that Zidane's on the bench, everybody talking about the goal against Bayer Leverkusen at Hampden in 2002. But Marcello, just almost hopefully hitting a cross in, because the way the cross is angled, it was no danger. It was behind Bale. It was always going to be, if it reached a Real Madrid player, it was going to be a difficult, difficult chance. But it was too low for a header. It was too high to control immediately and turn and shoot. I guess the only thing it was really perfect for was an overhead kick. And that's what we got. We got an overhead kick, and it was sublime. It was, I don't know how you could ask a defender to defend against that. Perhaps get his head close enough that it would be called by the referee as dangerous play. But that didn't happen. And the technique and the power that Bale got into the shot, Karius really didn't have a hope in hell. It was an absolute magnificent effort. So, you think about 2-1, but once again, a psychological blow for Liverpool. In as much as they get the Mane goal, they seem to be back in the game. They're going through a good spell, and suddenly, boom, they find themselves 2-1 down. It was the most kind of extraordinary strike, and once again, one that will stick in the memory for a long time. But despite kind of these setbacks that Liverpool faced, it was Sadio Mane again. 70th minute, hits the post, and what I scribbled down at that point is Liverpool are still in this. Despite taking these hammer blows, they're still in this game. They could still pull something out of this. And I think it was maybe a little deflection because I think it went out for a corner after that. Ronaldo had essentially done nothing. He had an about as quiet as I've ever remembered seeing him in a major final. Now, we've also seen him sort of evolve into this kind of predator in the box as opposed to the Ronaldo that picked up the ball deep and ran at defences. He's adapted his game as he's aged. He's 33, conserving energy and all the rest. But he was still very much somebody that Liverpool had to acknowledge was a danger. But he was a very, very quiet game. They did have a chance, and it was probably until there was a fan invasion, and it was literally a fan invasion with only seconds left that forced the referee to stop the play with only seconds left in the game. The real chance Ronaldo had was round about the 74th minute, and it was a tackle from Andy Robertson, who I thought came out of this game, as did a number of other Liverpool players. I thought Lovren was very good. Robertson, I thought, was excellent. I thought Wijnaldum stuck to it. Jordan Henderson as well had very good games. But Andy Robertson's tackle to catch up and then to block Ronaldo and Real Madrid had to make do with a corner really kept that glimmer of hope that Liverpool had of getting themselves back on even terms. It maintained that possibility. The problem, of course, for Liverpool at that time is you got 14, 15 minutes left in the game. You know, if you lose your shape and you start really just charging forward in without a sort of coordinated approach to it, Bale, Ronaldo, Modric was beginning, you know, by that time and established his game, the way that Kroos and Modric become the tempo of Real Madrid was very much in place by that time. So Liverpool continued to have to be, you know, the dilemma for them was they had to be cautious, but they also had to try and find an equaliser. 84th minute was the ultimate hammer blow. It gave the 83rd minute, 81st minute, Bale had fed in Benzema. Benzema had missed it. Liverpool made a substitution. Milner came off. Khan came on. I think that Shan came on, and that was I think, you know, Milner had given his all. Another player I should have probably mentioned in the players at Liverpool had done well and had good games. But in the 83rd minute, it was the hammer blow. It was another disaster for Karius. And Bale, I guess, deciding to buy a ticket in the lottery because he's picking the ball up. We saw goals like this coming from him a few years ago when he played for Spurs, basically cutting in a little bit from that old maybe inside right position on his left foot and just absolutely hammering it. And I think the reaction of the commentators was the ball must have moved, the ball must have dipped. You know, surely Karius couldn't have just misplayed it that badly. Unfortunately for Karius, he did play that ball that badly. There was very little dip, there was very little swerve. He could have punched it, he could have grabbed it, he could have perhaps even palmed it over the bar. But he decided to do none of them. He got caught completely tangled up and the ball just basically slipped through his hands, and I'm not even sure if it reached the back of the net, to be honest, but it certainly found its way over the line, and that was the most important thing. It must have been from nigh on 40 yards, and Bale certainly can hit a ball, but no keeper really should be getting beat from that distance. And I think the note I'd written down right after is, how do you recover from this? And the answer is you don't, because it was too much for Liverpool. Final, we talked a little bit about Ronaldo, last attempt being disturbed by a stupid field invader, and that brought that to an end. But Liverpool will look back and feel perhaps hard done by. But it was self-inflicted. Mignolet had lost his spot. Karius had come in. It actually looked pretty good as the season had gone on. Hadn't committed any errors that had led to goals in any of the games he'd played in the Champions League. And then he basically, in front of millions of people all around the world, puts in a performance that will be with him no matter how great a goalkeeper he becomes, no matter how many titles he wins. That will always be part of his resume, will always be part of his CV. The part he played in Real Madrid's 13th Champions League win, their fourth in five years, and their third in a row. Three in a row for Zidane, who's only been management for 30 months, I think it is. It was January 2016 when he took over from Rafa Benitez. Fifth medal for Ronaldo. He's got an edge on his teammates in terms of medals because of that one he got from Manchester. He won with Manchester United in 2008. And so Real Madrid seem to have aced the formula as far as Champions League is concerned, when we're basically getting told that it was almost impossible for a team to win back-to-back. Real Madrid win back-to-back last year and go one better this year and do three in a row. So it'd be, I think, don't know what the odds are already, but I would guess that somewhere there's a bookmaker made in Real Madrid the favourites for next year's title. Now, whether Liverpool can regroup and push on and repeat that kind of journey to the Champions League, I think Klopp, unfortunately for Klopp, another cup final defeat. I think I'm right in saying that's perhaps six in a row for him. But he got them there, and he got them there against the odds. The job now is to push on, is to improve the players he's got, perhaps make a couple of changes. But there's been so much that's been good about Liverpool's season this year. I think Van Dijk will prove to be an excellent purchase. Alexander Arnold, has been quite a find. Robertson as well, either the two fullbacks. Lovren had his troubles, but I thought he had a good final. Salah, obviously the player that I think when you're paying the kind of money they paid for Salah, they expect performance. But I don't think anybody expected the kind of performance from Salah that they got this year in terms of the high school finishing and just basically the threat that he posed to every defence. He was just absolutely red hot. And then Firmino and Mane up front, I guess Keita will be arriving during the summer, so that's going to give them something a little bit extra in midfield. But we're sitting, 26th of May, season starts mid-August. Let's face it, guys, only 3 months to the new season and we've got the World Cup in between. So anyway, that brings us to wrap up of the Champions League, and just be back in a couple of seconds to wrap up the show.
You're listening to Soccer Report Extra with Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan. Be sure to follow them both on Twitter. Links are in the show notes below. Now back to the show.
This is where we bring in Luke. Luke, what have you got for us this week?
I just wanted to address the issue of Jurgen Klopp and his cup woes. Mm. So it looks as though as manager he's been in seven finals. He won his first as the Dortmund beat Munich 5-2 in the 2012 German Cup.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, he's lost his six subsequent finals.
Ow. So. That's not good.
So there's that.
That's not good. But that could also turn around. At least he gets them there, right?
That's right.
One thing I've got to do before I go. I'm sorry, Sadio Mane, but I continually, I think it must be the Salah bit, but I keep on calling him Sane. I think it might be Leroy Sane as well. So thanks very much for listening. On behalf of Luke Crawford, myself, Bobby McMahon, and Owen O'Callaghan, who couldn't be with us this week, thank you for tuning in, and we hope you'll be back next week. Thank you very much. For someone who's so keen to snuggle, you
cause a lot of trouble. Thanks for listening to Soccer Report Extra. To keep tabs on the podcast, and get all the latest news, musings, and rants from Bobby and Owen, like us on Facebook at Soccer Report Extra. Music for this podcast graciously provided by Manitoba's hottest indie pop group, Misery Slims. Check them out on Spotify and YouTube, and follow the band on Facebook at Misery Slims.